The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
It's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Mark Eisler, this is Red Eye Radio.
It absolutely is that, and I am Mark Eisler. And you could reach me at the Mark Eisler Show, markeislershow.com, our website, and we'll let you know where I'm appearing next. And also, you can just email me, markeisler at AOL.com, M-A-R-K-I-S-L-E-R at AOL.com. But right now, we started tonight, different topics each night. Big one because of illegal immigration. You guys had mentioned that previously. And I gave you my take, and we've gone off a little bit of that. But let's see, he's been waiting a long time. Phil in Long Island, New York.
Hi, how you doing, Mark? Yeah, I just want to get on the topic of Antifa. Where do you see things going with them? You think the hammer's going to come down on them? I mean, me personally, I like to say yes. I like to have faith in Trump, you know, that he'll fire Sessions and, you know, get a new attorney general who will actually do the job and crack the hammer on them. But what do you think? Do you think they're going to be dealt with? Because I really like to see these pieces of garbage go down.
Well, I'm with you. I'd like to see something done with them, but there's nothing he can do unless it's a federal crime, you know, or appoint the right attorney general. I totally agree with you. I supported Sessions at the beginning. I thought, well, he wasn't my first choice, but he's a good guy, and he supported him first. You know, one of the may have been the first senator, I think he was, who supported Donald Trump for president, and I'm loyal. So I thought, that's fine. I might have picked Giuliani, or now I'd pick Trey Gowdy, or someone very strong, you know, committed. But I've been really surprised how weak he is. He even surprised me. Yeah. Not firing Rosenstein. That guy should have been fired already. He made a mistake recusing himself. But even if he make the mistake, at least make up for it by getting rid of this guy. He's been a disaster. And answering your question, so I think he's certainly going to fire a session. So what can the new attorney general do about crimes committed locally? That's up to the local police force, right? Portland police. I think we have a call from someone in Portland coming up. Portland mayor wanted the police to stand down, and so they did. So we got a problem with all these local cities.
Right. But can't the FBI step in at least? And, you know, if a new attorney general does come in, can't they crack down on them? I mean, I would definitely like to see that. And I hope that could happen. I mean, what do you think? You think that'll happen? Do you foresee Antifa going down in the future?
I don't know about going down, but I think you're right that there are things they could do to make it difficult, right? The Sessions got together on MS-13, so there are things they could do. I don't know, maybe they have to declare them a gang or something. So I take back what I said. It's not just the local authorities. I think they will, and I think they can do something. And there's no doubt in my mind Sessions goes by the new year. He's been told by his advisors, you can't do it now, even though he'd love to do it now. You'll have to wait till the next year, and I'm sure he's going to do it. So that'll change things, too, and hopefully there'll be someone very strong. By the way, Phil, I was very disappointed in his FBI pick. That guy's a nobody. I don't mean nobody. I mean he doesn't do anything. He's just there, and the FBI corruption didn't do much about it. We'll have to check this out. So I don't know where he got Ray from. I think he's getting some bad advice. But something will happen. By the way, don't you love it that they're anti-fascists and they're the fascists? You just love that?
Of course, exactly. It comes right out of Saul Alinsky's playbook. Accuse those which you were guilty of, and that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, exactly. Phil, great call. I love hearing from you. Okay, let's go to Jim in Portland. Jim, you're on with Mark.
Hi, Mark. Oh, by the way, what city are you in tonight?
I'm in Los Angeles. No, Los Angeles. Okay, it does originate from Dallas area.
Yeah. It struck me as kind of sinister, some of the stuff that was being said, I don't know, a week or so ago, Hillary Clinton saying we can't be civil until we have power. And it it seems like they have no concept of the loyal opposition like the British and the Commonwealths do. And it's the idea, if you oppose them, you're disloyal. And that's just not good. I mean, that's going totally in a bad direction. It's like they want to be appeased. They expect to be appeased. And they're veering towards, you know, they'd be very comfortable with one party rule if it's their party. And that's just not good stuff. It was sinister.
You said disloyal. And they don't think we're disloyal. They think we're evil. It's worse than that. They think if you don't agree with them, you're evil. Look at Judge Kavanaugh. Guy was a reprobate. I mean, there was not even any proof. It doesn't matter. By the way, if that never came up, they were looking for anything they could find. They were against him before they knew who he was. So you're too nice. Civility from these guys? No, we're evil. They want to get rid of us, and they would do almost anything to get rid of us. And their hatred for Trump? Oh, my God, do they hate that guy? I thought it was bad with George W. No, they hate this guy worse.
You're too civil. Like the 1920, it almost seems like the 1920s and the 1930s being replayed, doesn't it?
Well, I go back to the
parties of Europe.
Yeah, I go back to the 60s, though, because I think I don't know if you heard me Monday morning. I think we're in the second Civil War. I think it's really bad.
Mm.
Oh, you didn't want to hear that. Did I ruin your night?
No, it's not that. I was just kind of a stunned, you know, that I'm 67. I kind of remember that time, and it was just it seemed like being lost without a map or a compass. It was crazy making, and this idea of we're idealistic and we're so morally superior. It's really bad stuff, because when people think that, they do some pretty awful stuff, and that's throughout history even. Yeah.
Well, did you see Rand Paul? Senator Paul said he's worried someone's going to get murdered. You know, it almost happened with Scalise last year, and I think he's right.
Yeah, he is. I heard a joke that wasn't very funny about that. You know, I mean, not about the Scalise thing, but murdering politicians wholesale, and it was a joke. And I thought, it's happened. You know, I mean, somebody opens fire on people at that ballpark, and it's like a little spark could cause a big flame. We're at that point right now, it seems like, and that there is no goodwill. I mean,
did you hear last night?
There's a lot less than it should be, huh?
Did you hear me last night when I said, who do you think should be the Democrat nominee? And then it evolved into, who could you have a cup of coffee with? And even people on our side had a lot of trouble saying they could sit down with people they disagreed with. And that was going to be one of my themes tonight. What do people say to you, or what happens with your family when they see you're on the Republican or conservative side? People have lost families. It's gotten bad. And then another caller previously said to me, what do you think if the Republicans keep the House and increase their numbers in the Senate and they have the presidency, what's the reaction going to be? I worry about the reaction. They can't handle it now. Their hope is that they're going to turn things around in November. And if they don't, look out. I see riots in the street. I mean, I'm no expert on this. But
No.
Look, I'll tell you a quick story. I'm out walking around my house, and my kid's friend's best friend's, or one of her best friend's father, I thought he was just going to say hello to him. He runs after me. I'm just taking my walk. And he says, I saw you on radio, and you guys are crazy. And even, I thought the guy was going to hit me at one point. I'm just trying to do my walk. And he'd never done this before.
Yeah.
But the anger was so strong. I know you and Fox and the rest of those people thinking on the, you know, you're a radio guy and all this kind of, he was so angry at me. Yet we had civil discussions, you know, at the parties that he put on his house or whatever, and the kids were best friends. It was amazing. It was I really thought he was going to get violent. It's gotten really bad, so I don't look forward to this. And you asking them to be civil, we've passed those days. We've really passed those days.
Yeah.
It's pretty discouraging. And I'll speak for myself, but I know people who think like
right.
I do on my side. We think they're misguided, that they got the wrong ideas, and they think we're evil. One of the other things I threw out was they have such hatred for President Trump, they have no idea that a lot of us hated President Obama the same way. But there was no resistance. We just waited peacefully until his term was up. I wanted him to be gone the first time. I thought he was a disaster, maybe the worst president in our history. But we waited till it happened. Yeah, we did everything politically we could. And they picked on us because Mitch McConnell said, you know, we want to do what we can to get rid of him. I forget how he phrased it. That's about the most we said. But these guys, there's Holder saying, you know, I don't agree with Michelle Obama. When they get low, we kick him or whatever he said. I can't remember. Hillary, you're right, saying we're not going to be civil until we get back in power. Well, that makes sense in her case because she could never take not being in power, right? They're for sale anyway. This is not fun. This is not good. Hang in there, though. Okay. Jim, you live in Portland. I'm just looking at it again. Your mayor doesn't even want the police to do anything, right?
Yeah, I haven't followed that real close, but that's my understanding. I thought I heard one anecdote. Most of my news, I don't read the newspaper so much. I get it on the radio and word of mouth. And it's like he thought the Antifa, according
Antifa,
to one word of mouth story, they were the victims and not the people trying to do their daily lives. You know, I'm thinking, what's with Ted, you know? I mean, it's appalling. Frankly, I'm a little ashamed of them not having the guts to, not having the guts to have everybody obey the same laws.
No, it's you're such a nice guy. I don't want to disagree with you, but it's not a matter of guts. That's what he believes. He's a leftist. He believes or probably supports Antifa. It's not because he doesn't have courage. That's who he is, probably. Probably supports them.
Well,
it's worse than you. It's worse than you think.
You know, he campaigned on a different, with a different personality or a different persona. It's like what we got isn't what we were promised.
Well, that's always the case. I said the left doesn't want to admit that they want to impeach the president. There's going to be chaos in this country if they retake the House. They don't want to tell you when it's time to raise taxes, that they want to raise taxes. I rushed it, but Michael Dukakis, if you remember, his campaign was destroyed when he announced that he was in favor of higher taxes. Actually, I think it was Mondale. He had a problem with that tank. But Mondale announced against Reagan that he's for higher taxes. But kiss of death. So they don't want to do that. They're learning their lesson. You don't tell who you really are if you're on the left, because they know most of the American people would never support them. Jim, I appreciate your call very much, and we'll take your calls at 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339. Mark Eisler, filling in on Red Eye Radio.
In addition to being required by law, pre- and post-trip inspections are vital to the safety of professional drivers. Conducting thorough pre-trip inspections allows you to catch any problems before heading out on the road. Post-trip inspections give the shop time to react to any problems that were identified. During your next pre- or post-trip inspection, check all safety equipment, including fire extinguishers, triangles, and spare fuses, to make sure they're in the proper location. In the event an emergency responder is trying to locate the fire extinguisher, it's crucial that it's in the proper place and easy to find. TA Truck Service understands the importance of these inspections. If you find any issues during your own pre- or post-trip inspection, stop by a location near you to have your vehicle looked at by one of our expert technicians.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Mark Eisler back with you again, 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339 is the same number. And, Barbara, go ahead, you're on with Mark. Barbara in Baltimore.
Hi there, Mark. Hi. I'm so glad that you took my call. And I've been very interested in listening to this. I'm in Baltimore. I live in a very violent town, which is not my nature. But we have lots of stuff going on here, as you well know. But yeah. I've been listening to a lot of people calling in, and I'm hearing this timid fear. I think people better be prepared. We are going to win the House, and we're going to hold on to the Senate. I think we're going to add seats, and we're going to hold on to the House. People in this country are not crazy. They see what's happening. And I'm listening to, like, your caller from Oregon. You've got to be clueless not to realize that it's time for people to prepare to defend themselves. I mean, prepare to defend yourself and your position at all times is just how I see this. I don't think sitting around, I wonder what they're going to do. I wonder what is Antifa going to be put down. Yeah, they're going to get put down. They're going to be put down by the people who they attack. If somebody, we have the right to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to come to that. It very well may come to that. I saw what they were doing out there in Oregon, and people are running away. I mean, if you're in a car and somebody's trying, I think the biggest weapon in the world is the car to be driving. You're going to get in front of my car and tell me I need to move? I don't think so. I mean,
well,
I'm not getting
in front of your car. I can tell you that.
I don't think anybody should be getting in front of anyone's car. What is happening with law-abiding citizens who want, like that march for, I think it was a march for peace out there in Oregon, and these people are attacking you with masks on? I am an activist, and I do go out, but I wear my Trump gear. I wear my Trump hat. I wear what I want to wear, and I think we all need to take that position. And Republicans better get out and vote. And I'm a black person, but I'm going to say this. I don't understand any white person voting for a Democrat anymore, because it seems to me that if you're not with them, white people are the enemy. And as a black person, I have lost family members. They're telling me I think I'm white. I'm like, what do you mean? What is that? That's a crazy statement. I don't think I'm white. I think I'm free. I think I have liberty. I think I should be able to choose and who I want to choose. And you were so right with what you said about Obama. He's the worst president in history. It's true. History is going to bear us out on that. But we waited, and I joined the Tea Party. I mean, that was when it really started for me to get very active, because I realized that these people are on a rampage. They want to take away our rights. And I think the people in this country, if you can hear my voice, you better understand something. They want to take your liberty. And it's time for give me liberty or give me death. That's just it.
No, you said it very well. You're very articulate. I think that is the battle. I don't know if you heard me the first night this week, but I said there's a civil war going on in this country between those who, for the soul of this country.
It.
Yeah.
And it's against liberty and freedom, and we better realize it. And, and I think it's time for the Republican politicians, when Rand Paul said, I'm afraid somebody's going to get murdered. No, we're not afraid somebody's going to get murdered. You better understand something. It could very well happen, because they've already tried it. And you see yesterday, candidates who are out campaigning, one was knocked to the floor yesterday. See, that sort of stuff shouldn't even happen. That shouldn't even be happening. And I'm wondering, where were the campaign workers? You got somebody that you and your team are out there, and somebody just cold cocks and knocks this person out on the floor. See, they should have carried that other person out of there. That other person should have been on a gurney. If you're knocked out, somebody got to beat them down.
I love your fire, saying. Your passion. Yeah, no, you're right. We have to defend the liberty.
Ourselves. Yeah. We are the Second Amendment Party. And I'm not saying going out there shooting people, but I think we have the right to defend ourselves against them. And we need to take that stand.
You're just saying very, very well, Barbara. I appreciate your call very much. And I want to stand with you in the fight for liberty. Too many people have paid the ultimate price for us to give up now or be cowardly about it. Let me know what you think. Mark Eisler on Red Eye Radio.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Mark Eisler.
Mark Eisler back with you again on Red Eye Radio, and we're taking your calls, some really good ones. Let's go to Tom in Boston. You're on with Mark.
Mark, this all started way back in the late 1700s with the Progressive Revolution. They called it the French Revolution, but actually it was a Progressive Revolution. It led to Marx and Engels in the 1840s, Woodrow Wilson, a progressive that showing the movie Birth of America, led rise to the Ku Klux Klan, KKK, and then you have Joseph Stalin, a progressive, and the greatest progressive at all ever lived, Adolf Hitler, a progressive, the progressive's progressive, and then you had progressives after that, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, President Obama. I'll tell you, Bill Clinton and President Obama were identical. They both had two horrible first years. But Bill Clinton was smart enough to know that he better get in front of the train, the Republican train that came with the Newt Gingrich. But President Obama wasn't smart enough. He said the American people must have been crazy to elect the Republicans. And they weren't. They were crazy to elect President Obama.
Well, I see a difference. I thought Bill Clinton was much more about himself. You know, he wanted the fame, he wanted the adoration, he wanted to be loved. And I don't think his principles were as strong as Obama, who's an out-and-out leftist who believes what he says, right? Trained by Alinsky and Bill Ayers and all that kind of stuff. Not trained by Alinsky. Well, he certainly was there.
Yeah.
And so it was totally different. Obama really believed this stuff and was maybe the first leftist. Well, maybe not the first. I'm thinking even Roosevelt was pretty liberal out there, but certainly an out-and-out leftist. And he remember what he says 7 days before his victory. He wanted to fundamentally transform America. Who would say that except forget progressive and out-and-out leftist? So you have the history right. But you, I don't know, Clinton was not so much a leftist as about himself. And he and Hillary making money, the power of it all. And then you said something about welfare. You didn't finish it. Welfare reform. You know, he went with Gingrich, agreed with him because his principles were not that strong. It wasn't about that with Bill Clinton. Let's go to Charlotte in Pittsburgh. You're on with Mark.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I wanted to comment about the illegal aliens giving birth to children in this country. Their children are not automatic citizens because their parent was not under the sovereignty of the American government. So these people from China that fly over and give birth, their children aren't citizens. And that the problem
understanding is they are.
No, they're not. That's a misunderstanding because their parent is not an American citizen. They weren't under
they
the
sovereignty of.
Yes, they
don't
do.
Have to be.
Yes,
I don't want to argue that you may be right, but my understanding is if their child is born here, that's why they're called an anchor baby, and those anchor babies are American citizens.
Well, that's lefties propaganda that wants you to think that way. But the rule is that the parent has to be under the sovereignty of the American government. And just to give you another example, if an American citizen goes and lives many, many decades in another country and has children, their children aren't automatically citizens because they have to have some kind of length of residency in the United States before they had children.
But that's not true for anchor babies. The parents don't have to have, as you say, be citizens or have sovereignty. It's not my understanding. And the callers can let us know if we're wrong, but that's not my understanding. That if they're born here, and that's why you see that people come here all the time. Even we talked about that pregnancy in the hospital, that people come here from other countries and try to time it so their baby can be born here. If I'm wrong, call me at 866-90-RED-EYE. I want to know. I don't want to say something that's incorrect. Let's go to Rich in Charleston, South Carolina. Rich, you're on with Mark.
Hey, Mark, doing a great job. And I don't say filling in because we had a concept when I was in the Navy. You're sitting in the chair. You're the commanding officer. You are doing a great job. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Great. Great job, like I said. My point is this. Here's the thing. With the purest definition of terrorism, as I understand it, terrorism relies on the fear of the use or the fear of the threat of force, violence, coercion, intimidation to subdue the opinion, subdue the will of the people that it's directed at. So I think it would be safe to say that the leftists, by and large, are domestic terrorists. That would be something I would think. That's where I'd go with that. I mean, look, they're shooting up the ballpark, shooting up Steve Scalise. By the grace of God, the man's still alive today. Okay, you just had a conversation with a gentleman a couple callers ago, and I think you made the comment. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to put words in your mouth. You made the comment. You're a little bit worried about what happens if we do win the House and the Senate by a large enough margin. What are they going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I hope that people are going to vote the way they see the facts rather than not vote a certain way because of the fear of intimidation. Oh, gosh, well, Antifa people, you know, you can't even drive down the street in Portland, Oregon without having your car ravaged.
Yeah, no, I did say, by the way, I did say I'll take my chance with winning. I'd rather win and see what happens. I'm not going to lose and be intimidated by them.
Oh, okay. Then I stand corrected. Yes, sir. So, yeah, I mean, and that's, I mean, the whole thing with the Charlie Hebdo shootings. Europe's going to be gone in 50 years because they're scared to death to do anything about the problems they have. They'd rather, I mean, look at London, for God's sake.
Well, and there are no, I've had people. I've had people on the air. Yeah, I've had people on the air from Paris, the mayor of one of the cities around Paris. And in Paris, they have no-go zones where the police are afraid to go because it's so bad.
That's what I've heard.
Europe is lost.
I was in Paris years ago. I mean, some 10 years ago, I was on vacation with my son there. And you know, this was not – I mean, we didn't go there. We didn't know about a no-go zone if they existed. But, yeah, every section of town has their place where the police or the fire department won't go because they know the gangs will shoot them up. But when it's a group of immigrants that are in your country, legally or illegally, and you don't go in there because you're afraid that you're going to get turned on, you need to get them out. You need to deal with them. I mean,
but Rich, they brought them in the first place. They welcomed them in huge numbers. Angela Merkel was out of her mind.
Oh, and Angela Merkel, she might very well be the most effective weapon deployed against the Germans since America got involved in World War II. And I've said it before with regards to President Obama. He's been the most effective weapon deployed against America ever.
Yeah. He went on an apology tour when he started. Apologize for what? The greatest country in the history of the world? He was apologizing for us? Was he kidding?
How dare you apologize for the country that elected you to start with? I'm sorry that we elected him. So, yeah, I'll apologize for that. I didn't elect him. Trust me, I didn't do it.
You gave me a great idea. After he did his apology tour, President Obama did his apology tour, you and I and the rest of us should have gone out apologizing for him.
How about President Trump going around the world apologizing for President Obama? How's that?
Well, he's good enough to do it, right? He doesn't pull any punches.
President Trump is like the curmudgeonly doctor who tells you need to quit smoking and lose weight, but has bedside manner of a bobcat in a phone booth. But in the end, he's right. And President Trump must have a titanium backbone and brass. I won't say the rest of it, but
thank you.
Good Lord, what this man's go through. I remember when President Reagan was around. I was young. I was like, President Reagan, I was 16, 17, 18 years old at the time. good Lord have mercy, man, between the media and, oh, gosh, the never – holy cow. I wouldn't want that job for all the tea in China, and he's spending money to get it.
Well, you know, Rich, what's funny is that after President Reagan was finished, and even more so when he passed away, all of a sudden the same liberal outlets in the media were saying, oh, he was such a good guy and such a nice guy. And you think, wait a second, were you the same people that said what you did when he was around?
Well, they're starting to handle Bush the Younger now, too. They're starting to, oh, well, yeah, maybe he wasn't so bad. They've got another person to direct it at. And I'm 54. Okay, so I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm not a curmudgeonly that old of a guy. I'd figure myself, you know, 54. Okay. Good Lord, man! I don't think I've ever seen anybody hated on such a gut level. Well, yeah, I know why, because you know that Hillary was supposed to win because it was her turn, right? She was going to be the first president, and in your spot last night, who would you like to see run as president? I'd say Bernie Sanders running for president with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as his VP pick, okay? Donald Trump would eat them both alive at one time.
Rich, I think he's going to win no matter who they put up, and that's why I kidded around you. Last night I said, I want to whisper this. I think it was last night. Because you guys, you're going to have a heart attack if you know this. He's going to win re-election. Mm-hmm. He's going to be here for 6 years. Yeah. You guys, it's going to be a long 6 years for them.
Hey, we had our 8 years with Obama. They got their 8 years with President Trump, right?
Absolutely. What's fair, it comes around, goes around, right? Goes around, comes around.
Consequences, right?
Didn't he say that? Obama said, I won and you lost, that elections have consequences.
I won and you lost.
Right.
Deal with it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So,
You are good, Rich. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Mark. Keep up the great job.
Thank you so much. And we'll take the rest of your calls. You know the number by now, 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339. Mark Eisler filling in on Red Eye Radio.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Chrysler, back with you again, taking your calls. Let's go to John in Lebanon, Oregon. You're on with Mark.
Yeah, Mark. Hey, just listening to your commentary or the show. And I guess the point of mine is that these 3,000 or whatever number coming up from Honduras and so on through Guatemala, through Mexico, have already given up their right to asylum because they're in independent countries and they're out of their desperate situation as far as, it becomes an economic situation at that point. But if they want to seek asylum, they should be seeking it in Mexico and then going to our embassy to get proper immigration to the United States.
Yeah, but you know and I know that Mexico is not going to give them anything.
That's irrelevant. It's irrelevant because of the fact that they're in that country, and the proper way for them to immigrate to the United States would be go to our embassy and apply for immigration then. But they're in another country. Once they enter that other country and they're out of their situation, they are no longer asylum seekers. If they wish to seek asylum, it should be in that country, not ours.
That's a pretty good take. I like that. It's an interesting take. It's not going to work. Everybody's going to ignore that idea. But you're right. They've left their country, so they're not fleeing the same violence that they claim they were. And it would be nice if that was the case. I like the caller, I can't think of his name, who suggested that we should charge the countries, or not charge them, but he did say charge in one aspect, but, you know, fine them for every one of their illegals that comes to that country, the cost of their stay, And then he felt the countries wouldn't be so quick to let them come here.
Well, I agree that. Bill it back to Mexico and bill it back to Guatemala, the countries that they progressively come through. Because they have an equal, if not more, responsibility to take care of them than we do.
And because, look, you're making a great point. How can I disagree with you that they're not? It's funny because asylum means you're threatened with violence or some other reason, and once they're in another country on the way here, it's technical, but it's an interesting point.
It technically throws it out the window. Their argument goes straight out the window once they enter another country before coming to ours.
Mm-hmm. All right. I appreciate it. You guys are coming up with some good theories and some good ideas. Why aren't you guys in office? Because the people in office, that's not their agenda, right? They don't want to solve this problem on both sides. A pox on both your houses, the Democrats and the Republicans, on illegal immigration. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Let me know what you think. Mark Eisler filling in on Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Mark Eisler, this is Red Eye Radio.
Yes, and Mark Eisler is back with you again and with you for another night this particular week, another morning. But right now we have a special guest. I've never had him on my previous show, so it's a pleasure to welcome Grover Norquist, President of Americans for Tax Reform. Welcome to Red Eye Radio.
Good to be with you, Grover Norquist here.
Absolutely. I always ask my guests a little bit of a background. Why are tax cuts your passion? How did that ever start?
A long time ago, I realized that if you wanted people to be freer, have more control over their lives, have more time, have more ability to run their own lives, the hard edge of the government is when it decides how much of your time it's going to take. And when you take somebody's money, you take their time. You have to work so many hours to make a dollar. And when you raise taxes by X, you are taking that much of people's time away from them. And I think the question of how independent you are, how free you are, is largely a question and of how much the government takes in taxes. Yes, they can take some in regulation, you know, costs and so on. But taxes have traditionally been the place where the government runs up against you and your decisions in life and says, no, I know you want to do that. We want to do this. So we want you to go work and do, and we'll take the money and spend it on X. You want to spend it on Y, we say X. And when you look at American history, or the history of most nations, that's really been the key issue. From the Boston Tea Party and the taxation by the British to the tariffs throughout American history, changes people's lives.
It's funny you say that because I remember when I first moved in a conservative direction, or at least certainly I teach part-time too, I'll say to students, you know, what gives them a right to take out your money? And you may like some of the things they do with your money, and you may not like other things that they do with your money. And for the first time ever, people, when they start to get a paycheck, they go, whoa, I didn't understand that. They go, what happened to all my money? And I'll tell them all the time when I teach economics, you know, you thought you were making $300-$400 a week? No, that's not what you're going to wind up with because the government takes that part of your money, right, the federal, the state, take it in fees and all kinds of things besides taxes. And you may like what they're doing and you may not like what they're doing, but welcome to, the tax cuts, or in your case, to try to convince them that's correct. So I have a question for you. You don't oppose all tax cuts, do you?
No.
I mean, I said it wrong. I said you don't oppose all taxation, right? You understand? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you, what's the right rate for government to tax?
Less than we pay now. I don't know what the proper rate is. You have a sense. Right now we pay about a third of everything we earn in taxes, federal, state, local.
Not if you live in California.
Then it's more. But you should right. You should move. That's going crazy.
You don't know my line on that. We had a petition out here in California. I don't think it's on the ballot anymore, to secede from the rest of the country. And I said I want to be the first to sign that at the border on my way to Texas.
what we do have in American history is a sense of where taxes could be. When we were thinking about leaving Great Britain's loving embrace, 1774, we were paying, the average American was paying about 2%, between 1% and 2% of their income in taxes. And, you know, the Brits were thinking of going from between 1% to 2% to maybe as much as 3%. And we started shooting at them because that was not reasonable. So somewhere between 2%, we became, you know, the wealthiest area in the world as a colony. We were paying 2% taxes in London around 1774, 200 years ago. The Brits were paying about 20% for the honor of running our country. And it's expensive to run other people's countries. And they're paying 20%. We're paying 2%. And we said more than 2% is unacceptable. So I wouldn't mind getting down towards 2%. We'll see. You know, you can take it step by step, see what works.
You may be interested in this. I feel in other places, and one of my friends on National Talk Radio had on, it was Henry Waxman. If you remember him, I'm sure you do. Congressman Waxman. And the question he posed him was, the same one I just gave to you. What is the right rate to tax Americans? And his answer was something, I'm paraphrasing, his answer was something like, I never thought about that before. But of course on the left have never thought about that. He really just said, I've never thought about that.
That is odd. Odd that he didn't know and odd that he said it out loud. But yes. But there is a limit. That's where revolutions come from. That's where wars come from. At some point, there's a limit to how much people will put up with.
And I teach government and history, and I didn't know. Now you got to account for inflation, but I didn't know it was as low as it was 2% when they first started this thing. Wow.
Oh yeah, up until 1920s, 1930s, total federal, state, local was less than 10% of government. There's not a lot the government has to do. Half of the present government was created, of our federal government, was created in 4 years, 34 to 36, 1964 to 66, the New Deal and the Great Society. That's where half of the government was created. Without those 4 years, your federal taxes would be half up there.
That's amazing to hear. What's your political philosophy? Would you describe yourself as a libertarian? I think you are a Republican, right?
Yeah, well, I'm a Republican because there are two political parties, and that's how you engage in politics in the United States. Philosophy-wise, small L, libertarian, sure. Yeah.
Tell our listeners, because you're a big supporter of the Taxpayer Protection Pledge, what is that?
Well, it was something I created in 1985, 86. To help pass the Tax Reform Act of 1986. And people were worried that Ronald Reagan wanted to reform taxes, not raise it, reform taxes, not take the rates down and broaden the base. But there's always a danger that when you reform taxes, when the dust settles, your taxes go up. Because they're going to make 1,000 changes in the tax code. Oops, sorry. I guess when you add them all together, you're paying more now, which is not what we wanted. And not what President Reagan wanted. And he set up Americans for Tax Reform and asked if I'd run it. I said, yes, that's a great idea. I'd run the National Taxpayers Union before, good stuff. And so the pledge is a written, one sentence. I promise if elected, I will never raise taxes, period. No net tax increase. Even reform taxes, reduce rates, broaden the base, paid less or the same amount, but no net tax increase. If you add it all together, no tax increase. And Right now, about 90% of Republicans in the House and Senate nationally have taken that pledge, kept it. It's what allowed us to defeat Obama's effort to raise about $1.4 trillion in taxes back in 2011. He sort of said, oh, no, the economy is going to collapse. The government will collapse. You know, nothing will work if we don't raise taxes. And the Republicans held the line and said, no, listen, we're not raising taxes, period. We have to reduce the growth of spending. Right then, under Obama 2011, the government was spending 24%. Federal government was spending 24% of the economy. And that fell to 20% over a couple years simply by limiting the growth of spending while the economy grew a little bit. And so there's nothing radical about reducing taxes. You just have to not spend quite so much and hold that for a number of years. You can bring the rate down.
So I think I know the answer to this question. Has any Democrat signed the pledge?
They have. We get two kinds of people who, Democrats who signed the pledge. Back in 1994, when the Republicans won the House and the Senate, there were two Democrats in the Senate and five Democrats in the House who had taken the pledge and intended to keep it. And they all switched parties after the election.
I was going to guess that. I was going to say, yeah, the ones who the Democrats who signed it were switching or retiring. Ah, I just had that funny feeling.
Yeah, that's exactly just, what it was.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to be cynical, but you're right.
It's the biggest difference between the two parties. There are Democrats who, you know, won't spend money on a particular project. That's possible. But there are not any Democrats in Washington, D.C. who will not raise your taxes when there's a chance. There are almost no Republicans. You know, there were a couple of Republicans, 8 or 9, who didn't vote for the Trump tax cut. There's not a single Democrat who voted for it. Almost every Republican voted for it. And the ones who did vote against it knew it was going to pass. They just was this, that, or the other thing. They said, I wish you did it differently. So it's the central difference between the parties. There are, you know, a handful of Democrats who are pro-life on the abortion issue. There's some Republicans that are pro-choice. But the tax issue is the one that divides the two parties most completely.
And that's why I was asking. I wanted to say that's got to be one of the definitional things that the Republicans in general want. Limited government, certainly as part of that is lower taxes, and it defines the two parties. And it's important for people to know that. Grover has been kind enough to stay with us for another segment, and you can call in if you have any questions, and I have more questions for him. Let me know what you think. 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339. Mark Eisler filling in on Red Eye Radio.
Despite monthly adjustments down, when it comes to U.S. meat production year over year,
overall, we're still looking at a big increase in meat production from 18 to 19.
World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Meyer says some of the changes involve timing of production.
So when you look at beef, we reduced some production in late 2018 and moved that into some additional production in 2019.
And in terms of pork production,
and we look at slaughter pace and slaughter numbers and animal weights, we actually made some, not huge, but notable production changes
by, like beef, reducing 2018 pork production, which is expected to carry over into the following year. As for meat prices, other than a $1 increase for hogs from the previous month, prices for steers, broilers, and turkey remained unchanged in October. Total meat exports year over year remained up, including an increase in pork exports from September.
We did increase our exports this month and a good-sized increase year over year as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
We're back with you on Red Eye Radio, and you can call in with your questions for my special guest, Grover Norquist, president, he only wants to be one, president of Americans for Tax Reform, and you can reach him at 866-90-RED-EYE if you have any tax questions, and we'll weave that in. But I wanted to ask you, what did you think of the tax cut passed by Congress and the president?
It was a really helpful first step. One of the things that happened was during the Reagan years, we reduced marginal tax rates for people, individuals. Top rate was 70%. It had been as high as 90% during World War II. Kennedy took it from 90 to 70. Reagan took it from 70 to 28. Unfortunately, Bush and Clinton and Obama raised it back up towards over 40%. And so at the individual level, we began to take the rates down a little bit. But business taxes is where the United States was way out of line with the rest of the world. The rest of the world started experimenting with lower business taxes, lower corporate income taxes. When we took our individual rates down and did very well economically, a lot of the Eastern European countries, after they left the Soviet Union, their individual rates like 15%. Hungary, mm-hmm. its business tax is 9%. We were at 35. We had the highest business taxes in the world, and then we sat around going, how come we can't compete, you know, with China and Germany and stuff like that, and Ireland? Ireland's business tax is 12.5%. We were at 35, plus an average of 4% by states and local governments, so really 39 on average. And the Republicans took that down to 21, and it made us more competitive on the tax front than most of the countries in the world. The average European country is about 25, but 10 points better than what we used to be. You know, we were at 35, they were at 25, and they would beat us. When somebody would say, I have $1 million. I live in Brazil. I like to invest $1 million. Where do I put it? Gee, if I invest in the United States, they'll steal 35% of everything I make. If I put it in Germany, they only take 25. I go to Germany. And we shifted that down, and we have seen a massive diversion of foreign direct investment out of Europe into the United States. For starters, there was a $500 billion, half a trillion dollars in the last 6 months, which was earnings by American companies overseas. And we used to have a law until the Republican tax reform that punished you if you brought money back to the United States. If you left it overseas, there's maybe $3 trillion that left overseas, partly because, largely because our tax policy said we will hurt you if you want to bring the money back. And if you don't bring it back, that's okay. So $3 trillion was stuck overseas because of our tax policy. And we said, you know what, we're not doing that anymore. If you earn money in the United States, we tax it. But if you earn money in France, the French people will take some. And then you want to bring it back home to America? Good. No tax. No penalty. No penalty for bringing money back to the United States. How about that? And we've seen a tremendous, again, half a trillion dollars, $500 billion, come back in the last 6 months. And at Apple, they said, look, we have $290 billion of earnings overseas. They brought $90 billion right back. And then said, you know what, because it's no longer penalized to move money from London to New York or Texas, we may not bring it all back now. It's all coming back. But right now we may leave it in a London bank because it doesn't matter in terms of our access to capital, whether it's in London or in Arkansas, whereas before it did. So the money might as well already be back. But we've seen a half a trillion come back immediately, and we'll see more as we move forward. Add to that, guys overseas, you know, Germans and French people and Brazilians making decisions are sending their money to the United States rather than overseas. This is really irritating Europeans because we're much more competitive than we used to be, and it's been a big help.
Yeah, no, I can see why it seems so obvious. All these things seem so obvious to me. I have a couple more questions, and we're going to get some of the callers' questions for you also. But right now, we're going to get our national forecast for Omnitracs.
Lake effect snow off Lake Ontario on portions of I-90 will leave a light dusting of snow near Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo. Slick roads, not expecting a lot of snow with this system. On Lake Erie now from Erie, PA over to Cleveland, Ohio. On I-80 over to Toledo, not expecting snow, a little too warm in the region. The Midwest, Northeast, in fact, everyone east of the Mississippi today will be under high pressure, and that means clear skies. Rain for Texas continues today. We're looking at close to 2 months' worth of rain for some parts of central Texas. Snow in the southern Rockies. A little too warm for snow in Denver. The overnight low 34, high later today of 59. It's Winter Weather Preparedness Week in Colorado. A reminder that winter weather can arrive quickly and oftentimes without warning in the high country. And there's today's look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
And here's your chance. Any questions or comments you have on taxes, Grover Norquist will answer them for you. President of Americans for Tax Reform, Mark Osler on Red Eye Radio.
Phone lines are open. 1-866-907-3339. 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, for Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Mark Eisler.
Yeah, Mark is filling in. That's me for Gary and Eric, and they'll be back with you Sunday night, Monday morning. Right now, my special guest is Grover Norquist, President of Americans for Tax Reform. And if you have any questions about the tax code or anything related to that, 866-90-RED-EYE. And I have a question for him, and, you know, I think I have a feeling he's going to know my friend. My friend is Bruce Hershenson, and years ago, even before he ran for the Senate, he proposed that we should do our taxes. We should be able to do it on a postcard. And I think he, if I remember correctly, he was for a flat tax. How do you feel about that? Just one flat tax and you do it on a postcard?
Well, before I moved to the United States, I lived in Massachusetts, and that's where I grew up. We have in Massachusetts a flat rate income tax, about 5.25%. It's in the Constitution. A number of states have flat rates. Illinois does. 9 states have a flat rate of 0. And what we find is if you are at a flat rate, people think it's fair and they don't want to move away from it. I was always told as a kid, everybody agrees we should have a progressive graduated income tax. Some people pay 10%, some people pay 2%, you know, state taxes. Federal taxes, you know, go from 15% to almost 40%. If you tax everyone at the same rate, it keeps the tax rate low for everybody. In Massachusetts, 5 times the Democrats, the liberals have said, let's go to a graduated tax and, you know, divide people into 5 or 10 groups and tax them at different rates. And there's a very sophisticated discussion that went on talk radio. People said, oh, yeah, year one, they'll raise taxes on the Kennedy kids. Year two, they'll come from me, and the Kennedy kids will go, you're on your own, sucker, because I've already had my rates raised, and now it's your turn. And they would, over time, mug us one at a time, and everyone's rates would end up higher. And I think that is exactly what does happen in American history and other countries. So the best way to keep taxes low is to have one single rate. And then when the government says, I've got a great idea and you're all going to pay for it, and people said, you know what? Now we're all listening. Tell us about this great idea. Whereas both President Obama and President Clinton got elected promising, I will never raise your taxes. Now, I'm only going to raise taxes on them, the top 1 or 2%, said Clinton, 1%, said Obama. And of course, within the first year, they raised gasoline taxes on everyone. So the promises that somebody else is going to pay the taxes doesn't really last. So the safest thing to do is to have a single rate, to Texas people one time at one rate. It is the toughest tax to raise.
I was thinking of another one of his ideas, Bruce Hersenson. He said that if this idea that they take it out slowly prevents a revolution. If someone had to write a check for $5,000 at the end of a year or whatever it is, if they really knew what they were paying, there'd be an uproar. Do you agree with that assessment?
I not only agree with that, I wrote that in a paper my freshman year at Harvard, and they like flunked me on it, and I said, you know, this does come from a conversation I had with the IRS. I called them on the phone and said, if you didn't withhold taxes out of everyone's paycheck every 2 weeks, but instead once a month you said send in a check like the electric bill or the phone bill, or on April 15th said send a check for the whole year. And the IRS person I was talking to, I interviewed for the paper I was writing, he said, there'd be a revolution.
There would. Yeah. I think if someone had to write, you know, check $5,000, let alone 10, 20, whatever, there would be. You'd have a new Tea Party, right? Maybe these days it would.
It'd make it clear how much you actually pay.
Yeah. Let's go. I promised a caller or two. Mark in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on with Mark and with Grover Norquist.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll tell you what. You just took the words right out of my mouth. And here's what I've always have thought. Flat tax. And it's a 7% across the board. It don't matter whether you're a Warren Buffett or whether you're the guy working down there at McDonald's. It's 7%. You eliminate every deduction that there is as far as a with the tax. You eliminate all federal taxes, whether it's the fuel tax that we pay, or whether it's Social Security, income tax, you name it, if it's a federal tax, it no longer exists. You eliminate the 16th Amendment. And then, in order to raise taxes, if you're going to do it as Congress, that means you have to have a supermajority of both the House and the Senate to put the bill on the president's desk for him to sign it, for it to become a ballot election on every 2 years, if that's what they're going to do, and it requires a supermajority of all registered voters in order for the taxes to be raised. And I think, you know, and as you just mentioned, it doesn't come out of your paycheck. You write the check every month or every quarter. And believe me, when people realize how much that they're paying out in taxes, there would be a revolution in this country like you would not believe. Because I was self-employed, and I had to write that check every quarter. I couldn't believe how much I was having to pay out in taxes.
Interesting. Grover, what do you think of that, his idea?
I think he's right, and a number of the ideas he put out there are in state constitutions, in California, in Nevada. If a government wants to raise taxes, state government wants to raise taxes, it's a two-thirds vote of the legislature, because taxes are about as permanent as constitutional amendments, which usually take two-thirds to impose on people. And if you say it takes two-thirds to raise taxes, it really slows the tax and spenders down. It doesn't stop them completely, but it really slows it down. It has to be a really good idea. It has to have broad support to enact. And I think a flat tax with a supermajority to raise taxes would dramatically change our policy. Curious.
What do you think about some people propose the sales tax, a consumption tax? So what's your response to that?
Well, in Europe, they have a value-added tax, which is a sales tax at every step of production. If you're going to have a 20% sales tax, as some European countries do, you can't just collect it at the supermarket, because everybody would buy their stuff down the street from the supermarket, out the back of a truck. So they put that 20% at every level of production. The farmer pays it. The guy who trucks goods into town pays it 20% on his value added. it's a way to get a 20% tax, but in little amounts, and there's no one place where you can avoid it. The difference between the United States and Europe is that Europe has a sales tax, a national sales tax, a value-added tax, which hits every level of production. It's why they have higher taxes than we do. They have stupid income taxes. They have high income taxes. But you can only get so much money out of an income tax. People will quit working. They'll work around it. They'll hide money. When you add the VAT, the difference between the United States and Europe is that we don't have a VAT and they do. We don't have a sales tax, they do. Some people say, no, we want to switch. We're going to get rid of the income tax and have a national sales tax, a value-add tax instead. Well, that's kind of what they promised the Europeans and the Japanese and the Asians and the Africans when they put VATs in overseas. It will be in addition to, it will not be instead of. And if we could, and I'm for, bringing the income tax down towards zero, what you want to do is reduce spending, not just turn it into a different tax. Who cares if you got rid of the income tax and took the exact same amount of money out of the sales tax? How would that change anything? It's the same amount of money out of your pocket. It makes you feel better. Somebody else is writing the check, but everything you buy from your house to your car to your food to your clothes would cost more, and the taxes would be hidden in that. So I think going to a single rate tax, income tax, and reducing spending is the route to go to. Now, if you got taxes down enough that you could shift from a 10% income tax to, a 15% sales tax, because it's got to be broader, I wouldn't mind that. But you got to get the government to half its present size before you could risk that. And you'd really have to have protections. How do we know we're not going to end up with both an income tax and a sales tax? Mm-hmm. Too many countries have been hit with that.
And there's no incentive on the part of politicians because they get their money, campaign contributions, right? As part of this, hey, give me this donation, so on, and I'll lower your tax to this. They don't want the thing solved eventually, right? They would reduce their campaign contributions. Just a cynical thought on my part.
Having taxes that are complicated allows politicians to raise money to protect people bit by bit. If everyone's paying 1%, the same percentage, less opportunities to make money for politicians.
And lawyers and accountants. Maybe my final question for you, well, maybe I've got two more. What about the midterm? Sure. If the Democrats retake the House, what do you think about what's going to happen with the tax situation?
If the Democrats take the House, there will be no tax cuts for the next 2 years. They will be pushing for tax increases. They want at least $1 trillion in higher taxes. Hillary ran on raising taxes by $1 trillion over a decade, at least $1 trillion. From where we were, we cut taxes $1.5 trillion. They want to raise them $1 trillion from where we were. So that's $2.5 trillion in taxes per decade that they wanted to increase taxes. They'll be pushing for that. I think with both Trump and the Republican Senate that they won't get a tax increase, but they'll sit there and say, hey, if you want the military to get paid, we'll only do that. We'll only pass the budget for the soldiers and airmen and seamen if you give me a tax increase. They will spend 2 years trying to get a tax increase. I hope they will fail. That is what I will be working on. But Democrats on the tax issue are like teenage boys on a prom date. They keep asking for the same thing in different ways. They just again and again and again, they keep coming back. They want one thing. They want higher taxes. And they will ask that question 20 different ways. There'll be green taxes that will save the planet. There'll be envy taxes that are only paid by other people. They will repackage the same tax increase a dozen ways.
Maybe a new Supreme Court tax to pack the court. Who knows? They can come up with anything.
Governor Quist, they're talking about.
Really? I didn't hear that one.
Yes.
I hear a lot of us want to get out of it, and they want to propose a tax for it. Grover Norquist, President of Americans for Tax Reform. How do people get in touch with you?
Our website is atr.org. And we have a list of all of the companies that have raised pay, raised benefits because of the tax cuts. It's kind of fun, HER.org. I tweeted at Grover Norquist.
Well, terrific. Thanks for giving us so much time. And I support what you're doing. And thank you for joining us on Red Eye Radio.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, and we'll take the rest of your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE, 866-907-3339. Mark Eisler filling in on Red Eye Radio.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Mark Eisler back with you again. Well, time goes fast, you know. It's been a pretty good show. Thanks to you guys calling in and expressing your point of view. And speaking of thanking people, couldn't do the show without Brian producing the show and Alan screening the calls. We're a team that makes this work. Otherwise, it could never happen. You could reach me at markeisler@AOL.com, markeisler@AOL.com, or the markeislershow.com is the website where you can conveniently go to. I will see you tomorrow, but I always finish my shows the same way. It's a privilege to have a microphone in the greatest country in the history of the world. Until tomorrow night, in the morning, Mark Eisler on Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.